I'm Bob Baker. I live in Columbia, New Hampshire. I spent most of my working years as a lawyer in Connecticut, and I'm licensed for the moment until I officially retire, both in Connecticut and New Hampshire. I've been involved in this fight since October of 2010, when we woke up and saw the initial roots published on the front page of various papers. It struck me as an exceedingly bad idea because it destroyed my dream of a retirement home that I've built in Columbia, with this transmission line passing by in the field next to mine. That's all changed, but it hasn't changed my conviction that this is a bad idea. I'm here today to talk about what's going on in Connecticut, my former home state. Connecticut has renewable power goals like the rest of New England, 20% by 2020, but it's not done a very good job of building out any renewable power in Connecticut for primary reason it doesn't like what wind towers look like on its ridgelines. I know, it's sad. There is only one wind tower project that has been approved in Connecticut, and it is on appeal to the Supreme Court, and it looks to me like it'll be 5 or 6 years before anything gets built in Connecticut. So they've got a problem. They've solved that problem by purchasing renewable power from states like New Hampshire that have had the guts to build it. And in particular, they've been buying our biomass. There was a energy plan being put together by the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, also known as DEEP in Connecticut, and it was to be published in January. It got held up. In March, DEEP sprung Senate Bill 1138 on the community, prior to the publication of the energy plan that was supposed to precede any legislation. There were 4 or 5 days before the first hearing on that bill that was given to public notice. But lots of folks showed up for that hearing. And there were only 3 constituencies in favor of that bill. One was Commissioner Esty, Governor Malloy's energy czar, if you will. Was one. Hydro-Quebec was a second one, and the third major constituent that showed up in support of it was Northeast Utilities. Every environmental organization spoke against it that testified, as far as I know. Many individuals spoke against it, and interestingly enough, the energy industry as a whole spoke against it. What did it do? There were 3 things that upset people. One was that it recognized big hydro, large hydro projects for the first time as qualifying as renewable power. The bill is single space, 9 pages long. It's very complicated, but when you read through it and you think about what the various definitions mean, there's only one company in the world that can provide that hydropower. It's Hydro-Quebec. The second thing that it did was it gave Commissioner Esty the right, the duty, to bid long-term purchase agreements for various renewable energy. When you read through the bill, it basically tells him, you got to go up and bid for this power with Hydro-Quebec. Buy it at a premium, and we'll count it as renewable if we need it. There were some amendments and other things that went on. But basically, Commissioner Esty is given the power to enter into a power purchase agreement with Hydro-Quebec for 20 years. And it will be the Connecticut ratepayers subsidizing Hydro-Quebec, paying higher rates than they would if Hydro-Quebec was competing with baseload nuclear and natural gas-fired power plants. So It's a tremendous benefit to Hydro-Québec. It changes the economics of what has become a very difficult project for them if this were allowed. And the third thing that it did was it redefined eligible renewable energy in Connecticut to exclude biomass in Maine and New Hampshire. Well, what's the problem with that? We're going to support lots of jobs in Canada, and we're going to get rid of a few jobs in New England. People in the forests that, you know, they can go find something else to do. That's the attitude in Connecticut. We're not just a pass-through. We're a has-been. They have no respect for us up here. And instead of this bill benefiting Hydro-Québec, I think as it's understood in New Hampshire more and more, it will actually help defeat this project. Because why would we allow a high-voltage direct current transmission line bringing all of this power down here where we send our U.S. dollars north to Canada to support Canadian jobs when there's nothing in it for us and it's for the pleasure of the folks down in Connecticut? I mean, I'm ashamed to say that. I am from Connecticut. But that's what it's for. Now, why would Commissioner Esty be pushing this bill? I can't answer the question. All I can do is tell you some facts. He used to be a professor at Yale. And when he was a professor at Yale, he did a lot of consulting for the energy industry. And I'm sure he did a great job. He was paid over $200,000 by Northeast Utilities for that consulting. So they know who he is. Another fact, energy tariff experts, Cambridge, Mass group, came out originally in favor of the Northern Pass, thought it was a great idea. They looked at the Connecticut legislation and examined it and read all single space 9 pages of it and concluded, this is their conclusion, that the bill was written by lobbyists for Northeast Utilities. Surprise. there are some other facts in Connecticut that I could go into that would give you cause to have the hair on your neck raised with respect to special relationships. And part of the problem in Connecticut is that it's a very, very high-tax state. It's got a lot of revenue problems right now, and they're trying desperately to keep folks in office who want to appear to look like they're doing something important for the ratepayers and the voters. And that goes on everywhere. I understand that. But this bill is just bad policy in Connecticut, and the consumers will pay. So that's what's happening down in Connecticut. The House and the Senate have both passed it. Governor Malloy has said he will sign it. It will take a while to implement it. Will it be effective? I doubt it. I doubt that it will ever. Certainly won't take place if we can stop the Northern Pass. They may be able to purchase it by other transmission areas around us if they can increase the power over the existing HVDC line, perhaps. They can buy that. God bless them, but they're paying more for hydropower than they would have to if they just left the marketplace compete with itself. And there's nothing to prevent power companies today from contracting with Hydro-Québec for long-term power purchase agreements. They can do it. But Hydro-Québec doesn't like the price right now. The market price is a little low for them. A similar movement is going on in Rhode Island. By the way, the Connecticut bill is Senate Bill 1138, if anyone wants to look into that and do a further research. But that's a done deal in Connecticut, as far as I can tell. The Senate just approved an amended version of that bill that went through the House, so it looks like it's all done except for the governor's signature, and that can be applied any day now. In Rhode Island, Governor Chafee has introduced a bill, Senate Bill 901. It's slightly different than Connecticut. It's not quite as draconian. There actually may be some things in it that folks might like. But again, he is advocating treating big hydro from Canada as renewable. That has been tabled, as far as I know, but it still could be acted upon this year. Is that right, Christophe?
Yes, it could come back, but it is the
Okay, that's great. Now, and I wasn't aware of that. So that could help. CLF, by the way, the reason I looked at Christophe is they have had taken a very active role in opposing the draconian provisions of the Rhode Island bill, and CLF has published a position on that bill that reads very well, and I thank the CLF for doing that. So that really ends my report on Connecticut and Rhode Island with Christophe's help, and I'll turn it over to the next speaker. Jim?